Feeney.
I'm Clancy.
And I'm Damien.
Now you might be asking, what do two Aussies and a Pom have in common?
Quite a lot, actually.
For starters, Her Majesty has her face on all our currencies.
Even the coins.
There's a great Union Jack floating around some flags as well.
And we speak the same language, sort of.
Somehow.
Allegedly.
And we love winding each other up.
What are we doing here then?
Winding you up. But anyway, on this show, we discuss current Australian politics.
We take a look at past events.
While on a mission to ensure the Governor General stays in their job.
What? I didn't sign up for this. What?
It's in the show's name, Phoebe. Welcome to Let's Save the Governor General.
No, I don't want to. Kick him out.
What about her?
Or her. No, let's just not have a Governor General. Let's have a republic.
With who is president?
Not ScoMo.
President ScoMo. President ScoMo.
No, President Julia Gillard.
President Craig Kelly. Hello. Welcome. We are finally back on the horse. It's the first episode of 2024 for Tasmania and Michigan's favourite Australian political podcast, Let's Save the Governor General. Yay for us.
Yay. Happy 2024.
Happy 2024. We survived.
We survived the apocalypse. Yes, we survived the apocalypse.
You survived the snowpocalypse, Phoebe.
Yes, we did.
This is your first winter as an American.
I'm not quite American yet. I'm some expat at the moment. Right. I haven't got that, you know, American passport with the eagle on it yet. I haven't got that. But what I would say is that infrastructure is not the greatest of things that Americans do very well at. So let's put it this way. The first real heavy snowstorm of the year, power was out in my city for a day. Whole day. I remember in Britain, if that had happened, there would have been public inquiries, people rioting in the streets. I remember once in London, power went out for 25 minutes, caused havoc. There were public inquiries, there were people complaining, there were lawsuits. Here, oh well, power's gone out. You what? Richest country on earth, can't keep the lights on.
Are they keeping the lights on in Tasmania, Clancy?
They're managing to. The power costs rather a lot for having been locally produced by renewable means, but they're still going.
You got a turbine on your roof? Have you got solar panels?
Not yet. I'm planning to get some. Look, I've looked into it, but I had to actually get my roof fixed and get my renovations done first. So that's done. Yes. So that's going to be one of the next projects, is solar in the roof.
How was New Year's for you all?
It was absolutely fantastic. Went to a lovely New Year's party. Saw in the new year wonderfully. It was all good. We watched the ball drop on television. It was really, really good.
The ball drop. Oh, that's right. They have that thing in America, don't they?
Yeah, they have the New York ball. If you're on Eastern time, they do the ball drop.
Did you see that cringy interview that Ryan Seacrest did with the president?
Who's he?
Yes. He, like, I think he's part of the, because it was all over my YouTube, where Ryan Seacrest, he was a host of, like, the NBC or whatever, you know, New Year celebrations, and he interviewed Joe and Jill Biden. And yeah, it was just a really awkward interview. It's like, what do you eat at Christmas time? And Joe Biden goes, I just eat whatever they put in front of me. Oh, I like ice cream as well. It's like, it was so hard.
He's an old man. Like, what do you expect? He's an old man running for president against another old man who's running for president. Both of them lost the plot. And I say both of them have lost the plot because one guy can't stop getting in trouble with the law, can't stop, you know, going to court, having massive great judgments made against him, and the other guy can't remember what day of the week.
Actually it goes a bit further than that. The other guy is too, his memory's so shot that he can't be charged with any crimes.
And the other guy thinks that because he was president, he's got immunity from everything. He's gone so far the other way that he thinks he can do anything. That's how bonkers the other guy's got. He said, I could stab somebody to death, I could shoot them, and you can't prosecute.
It squeezed $365 million out of him, though.
As interesting as American politics is, nothing touches Australian politics. No, because during this last week, the ABC released episode 3 of 3 of Nemesis, which was a look at the Liberal government between 2013 and 2022.
Do you know what Nemesis means?
Like an enemy.
enemy.
A righteous infliction of retribution manifest by an appropriate agent. Or in this case, the ABC.
ABC. So actually, I've got a question for all two of you ladies. Now, Phoebe, I know you haven't finished the last episode, but having watched what you've watched, out of the three prime ministers, Abbott, Morrison, and Turnbull, who would you want back? If you had to have one of them back, who would you have back?
Turnbull.
Yeah, I'd agree, Turnbull.
Now, here's my order, and this order will shock people. I would go Turnbull, Abbott, Morrison.
So Morrison top on top priority.
Morrison number three out of three.
Okay, yeah. Yes.
So he's the person I want back the least. I'd put Tony Abbott in front of Scott Morrison.
I would actually generally agree with that. Though I did think that even though Abbott wasn't in the chair for 3 years, I thought what he got done during those two and a bit years. I thought you did pretty well. I think we covered it in our episode. But
about Tony Abbott that I did actually take away from the documentary, outside of politics, he's probably a great bloke. Outside of politics and religion, he's probably a really great bloke who you see him down the beach, he'll invite you into his house, he'll go out and he'll fight a fire. And he's a really genuinely great bloke. But that don't make him any good at running Australia.
I think politicians have like two personas: their political persona, then who they are when the camera's away. But anyway, so Nemesis was three 1.5-hour episodes. The first episode covered the Abbott years, his rise to the top job, and how he fell. The second episode was Malcolm Turnbull, his rise to the top job, and how he fell. And then the last episode, which aired just recently, was Scott Morrison, his rise and how he fell. And basically the way the show ran was that there was no, how can I say, it wasn't, there was no voiceover or anything. It was literally the politicians and advisors speaking in their own words. There's like a word association. They were asked questions, yes, but then, you know, but like there was no like interjection or anything. It was just, you know. The politicians speaking for themselves, and I think it was good how you had like Morrison supporters and you had Morrison detractors. You had Turnbull supporters, but there was a quote from Malcolm Turnbull which I think stuck, and I think you know which one I'm talking about. Phoebe, was
the only person you can trust in a vote is the guy who walks up to you and shakes hands with you and looks you dead in the eyes and says, I would rather have my right arm drop off than fucking vote for you. You can guarantee there are no.
I thought it was great.
Guardian put it. It's what political junkies have been craving for over the new year.
Indeed. However, there were two notable absences. The first notable absence was Tony Abbott himself. And apparently Tony Abbott was the first prime minister in like 30 years to not sit down for an ABC retrospective into his life. And the other notable absence was this lady on screen, Tony Abbott's chief of staff, Peter Credlin.
But first, working as a prime minister's chief of staff was the best time of my life. The best job I've ever had and am likely to ever had. But seeing that PM unjustly turfed from his office was the worst, especially as I was collateral damage in Malcolm Turnbull's campaign to seize the country's top job that he could never have won fair and square in a general election. Because it was so painful, I've hardly ever spoken about it publicly. Now, sure, I talk about politics and policy every night here with you, but not this. However, as I watched the ABC's Nemesis program on Monday night, it all came back. So after 10 years of holding it all in, I wrote about how that felt in my column today for The Australian.
She wrote about it in her column for The Australian. That's the best place to let your feelings be made known. But she did go on to say that one of the reasons she didn't participate was because the ABC, she felt that the ABC were essentially going to do a hatchet job on her, like, you know, twist her words and all that kind of stuff. Now, I actually disagree with her decision to not put her voice, because one, who watches Sky News Australia? Like, barely anyone watches Sky News Australia. So if she really wanted to get her side of the story out there, hardly anyone watches Sky News Australia, hardly anyone reads The Australian. Whereas if she wanted to get her voice out there, lots of people watch the ABC, and this has gone international. What better platform than to, you know, on something international? And the other thing is, where she said that, you know, the ABC were going to chop her own, like, you know, basically make a mishmash of her words, like, to words to that effect, I disagree, because later in this editorial piece, she goes, you know, listen to Malcolm Turnbull supporters in their own words describe how they plotted to undermine Tony Abbott. Well, hold on, you know, if the ABC could play politicians in their own words, then surely they'd do the same for her. No, it's, yeah.
It strikes me as one of these things was, I want my cake and I want to eat my cake and I want to have it too. Mm-hmm. Where yep. There was no good faith given by Peter Credlin or Tony Abbott, for that matter, mm-hmm. about what was done here. I mean, yes, okay, the pair of them have their issues with the ABC and SBS. Have yep. their issues with yep. both of those broadcasters because they take a chunk of public money and they are ideologically opposed to it. They also see them as being, you know, lefty and all this, that, and the other. Whether that's true or not is irrelevant here. Whether that's true yep. or not is absolutely irrelevant here. The thing to remember about the news gathering side and the political opinion side of the ABC does fall under the news gathering side is that it has to have some form of
equality, balance.
Balance. It has to have some mm-hmm. form of element of, I wouldn't say neutrality, but some accuracy in what it is portraying.
Yep,
and
yep.
this documentary, whilst it may not have been the most flattering thing for the Liberal Party of Australia,
No.
The times that they were covering were not the most flattering times for the Liberal Party of Australia. I remember.
But the whole point of the documentary was that it was the point of view of the players.
Absolutely.
So it wasn't, you know, they weren't interviewing Labor staffers asking them about what had happened. They were actually interviewing the people who were the movers and shakers in the whole...
The person I found most interesting that they interviewed in the whole documentary was John Howard.
Yeah.
He was the most interesting character there because he was seen as this grandee. And the thing that struck me the most was when Josh Frydenberg got on the Blather team and went, we're going to be spending an inordinate amount of money. And he turned around to him and said, in a case like this, you do what you have to do and your ideology goes in the bin. And I thought, you've asked permission from John Howard on how to do your job. That tells me who still really runs the Liberal Party.
Yeah. Well, actually, no, let's play our own word game. Let's play a word game. Describe these prime ministers in one word. Tony Abbott.
Slimy.
Narcissistic.
Driven is the way I put it. Okay, Turnbull. How describes Turnbull in one word?
Honest.
Conflicted.
Idealistic. Describe Scott Morrison in one word.
Evangelical.
Two-faced.
Bulldozer. And yeah. if you do watch the Scott Morrison episode, that is...
That's what they call him. That's what he calls himself.
Yeah, exactly. Even in his own words, he describes. Because for me, I came away very angry with Scott Morrison after his episode.
The thing I found most disturbing,
yep.
before I forget, about the Scott Morrison episode was the lack of transparency he gave to the individuals whose jobs he was absorbing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's what I mean about two-faced.
Oh, what was the guy in the Senate, the guy from France who's got the French accent?
Matthias Cormann.
Matthias Cormann, that's right, where he took over Matthias Cormann's job without telling him. He didn't tell Matthias Cormann that he had sworn himself in to the job Matthias Cormann had. He didn't tell him that. And I found that to be because he saw himself as untouchable. He saw himself as a messiah-type character that was untouchable, that could do as he pleased.
Mm-hmm. It's not just the fact that he took upon that job for himself. It was his reason for not telling anyone was that things got really hectic and got really busy, you know. That kind of set me off. Like before this episode, I thought ScoMo was a bit of a dickhead, but you know, I'll just let him be. But now I think he's I wouldn't quite say cancerous, but then also where was it, the bushfire episode, like, you know, where he went off to Hawaii,
just off to Hawaii.
And like in his own explanation, I think you probably would have seen this, Phoebe, where like he said that every year he goes out to the south coast of New South Wales for a holiday, but Narendra Modi had invited him to to somewhere, you know, for a meeting
in January. There was footage of the bushfires that improved my perception of Tony Abbott.
Mm-hmm.
Because Tony Abbott, I don't like his policies and I don't like his religion, but he's probably a decent bloke down a pub, probably a loyal bloke to his family, and he's probably a damn good mate because he actually goes out and does things. In the words of Scott Morrison, I wasn't holding a hose. None of us were, unless we were Tony Abbott and actually part of a brigade.
I don't hold a hose, mate, and I don't sit in a I don't sit in a control room. Those
part of
words.
A brigade like Tony Abbott is.
Indeed, yes, yes.
I found that to be one of the few things about Tony Abbott that I just went, you're a doer, not a talker, but that ain't good enough for you to be running Australia, but you're probably a very good, reliable, dependable mate.
Yeah. The other thing that got me about Scott Morrison was his, when he was asked, like, so the one decision that he did make in his multiple ministries was about the PEP11, which was a petroleum exploration license in a politically sensitive seat. The interviewer asked him, you know, you already had a minister. It wasn't his decision to make. And Scott Morrison essentially said, well, it was my decision to make. And to me, just the lack of contrition, the lack of humility, just the whole thing, you know, like, he's a bulldozer. And what else was there? There was another thing that he, where his view towards women was questioned. And he basically excused it as saying, look, I'm a suburban dad, and, you know, suburban dads have a general way of putting things that's a little bit clunky. But I would argue that Scott Morrison is far from a suburban dad. Like, the guy was the fucking head of Tourism Australia. You know, you don't get to that level of political success without being able to pick the right words at the right time.
Low-key defense. It's like, I'm just one of the boys. You can trust me because I'm just one of the boys. Yeah.
But on that note, what did shock me the most was the retrospective of the male-female makeup of the three cabinets that the three PMs had. When you looked at Tony Abbott, the only person who was in his cabinet
was Julie.
Was the only person he couldn't exclude from his cabinet, who was Julie Bishop.
Yeah.
Not a single other woman was included in Tony Abbott's cabinet, and the only reason that Julie Bishop was there was because she was the deputy parliamentary leader of the Liberal Party.
I would say, whereas on the other extreme, Scott Morrison had, like, you know, apparently like a record number of women there, but to me it really comes across as he has a record number of women there just so he can say he has a record number of women in his cabinet.
I think I took away from all three of them,
mm-hmm.
and most egregiously with Scott Morrison, was that Scott Morrison was very much an individual who had an inner circle, and if you weren't on that inner circle, you were a bye. Tony Abbott had an inner circle until they tried to oust him, and then it was like, shit.
Is that where he said, good government starts today?
Yes. So I said, good government started, which was the worst line he could have said, because we were saying that before that, good government hadn't actually been around.
Yeah, very good point. Indeed.
So, Clancy, here's a question for you. You are offered any job you like in the cabinet of one of those people, one of those three. What job do you have, and in whose cabinet do you serve?
Minister for Health. And I would actually go for Morrison.
Okay.
Because I'd go up against Morrison.
And what about you, Damien? You can have any job you like, but you can only have it in one of those ministries.
I'd probably want to be under Abbott. And the reason I'd be under Abbott was because by the time you get to Turnbull and then Morrison, the infighting is so severe. Whereas under Abbott, especially under Abbott's early cabinet, it wasn't too bad. It was only later stages. And the ministry I would pick would be Minister for Cybersecurity.
I'd pick the Attorney General under Malcolm Turnbull.
Oh, okay.
Because I'd want to dismantle Robodebt.
Anyway, speaking of someone who kind of dismantled himself, let's go over to our old mate, Barnaby Joyce. Barnaby Joyce.
Not quite in the gutter, but he may as well be.
For those of you not watching this because you're listening to it, that was Barnaby Joyce, who is lying in his suit on a Canberra street as if he's fallen out of a planter box, which is like the public installation where they put plants on the street.
Oh.
Yeah, so he's lying in his suit. He's on the phone apparently to his wife, and he's kind of mumbling kind of incoherently. The sound isn't really that good. Sound isn't really that good, but what that has been the talk of Australian politics this week. Should Barnaby Joyce go? What's his excuse for it? The optics of it? Ladies, what are your thoughts?
Barnaby should have been turfed years ago, quite frankly.
He's been turfed and then he's come back. He got turfed again and then he came back.
He's coming about like an old a bad smell, you know. Someone stuffed the gym bag in the locker and then they took it out again.
However, there is a certain and this was made apparent during the Nemesis documentary as well, is that he is relatively down to earth. And this was kind of made apparent during the Morrison episode when they talk about religion, where like Barnaby says something about like, you know, religion is like a private thing between you and God, whereas ScoMo put it front and center and let the cameras in. But anyway, that's kind of an aside. Barnaby Joyce's excuse was that that night he had been to two parliamentary functions and had drunk a fair bit, and he's been on prescription medication, which had a bad reaction. And apparently one of those bad reactions is that you lose balance and find yourself on a street in Canberra mumbling to your wife, as happens. It could happen to anyone.
Happen to anyone.
Phoebe, what's your perspective on from your side of the world?
It's quite tame, really. It's quite tame. But it's not the greatest of looks. I think that he comes across as a man who has come to the end of what has been a very, very colourful political career.
Yep.
And he has had very lofty positions. Leader of the National Party, member of the Senate,
Deputy PM,
member of the House, Deputy Prime Minister, all these portfolios he's held. But I think that when the time comes, just like when the time came for Bob Hawke, and just like when the time came for Paul Keating and John Howard and Julia Gillard and Kevin Rudd and Tony Abbott.
Phoebe, can I pause you there? There was a thought I had before. You had a thought about about Tony Abbott, where he, or was it Scott Morrison, where you said that he had this really tight inner circle, and if you weren't in that inner circle, you know, you weren't listened to. Kevin Rudd had exactly the same thing. He had what was called the kitchen cabinet, which was him, Julia Gillard, and two other people, and they basically ran the entire government from those four ministries.
Stuff like Tony Blair and sofa guff. Sit on, have two three-seater sofas, and if you couldn't sit on one of the sofas, you weren't part of this discussion. His time has finished. His time in politics is yesterday. It's no longer today.
Okay.
And I think that he either needs to stand down at the next election or quietly...
The people of New England.
Yes. Deserve somebody new, I think. Because I think the people of New England have got somebody who has become the person that you don't pay attention to seriously anymore.
He's the Boris Johnson of Australian politics.
She's right. Nobody pays attention to Boris Johnson anymore. Nobody.
True. This is,
Boris Johnson had his colourful moments when he was leaving office.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, he's a total buffoon. And of course, the interesting thing when stuff like this happens is it highlights the fact that a lot of people aren't twigged to the fact that it's a coalition. So happens, it's like the Liberals will distance themselves from the Nationals, you know.
But when things are going good.
Oh, no, we're all part of the same organisation. It's like, well, no, you're not. You're a coalition. And people who are voting are not actually voting for the Libs. They're voting for the Nationals. And when this happens, they're not voting for either of them.
Yeah, but it does make me wonder, like, if this person taking the with their phone wasn't walking down in Canberra Street late at night, like, we would never have known about this.
Well, yeah, it makes you wonder how many other times it has happened already.
Yeah, exactly, yes. Or, like, anyone else. Like, you know, there's, like, 150-something parliamentarians. Sorry, 200-something parliamentarians. You know, there's out of all the alcohol consumption, there's surely got to be more than one Barnaby Joyce.
Oh, no, there's only one Barney Joyce.
It's been something that's been highlighted before many times, and the fact of how much alcohol there is in Parliament. I mean, you can go to lunch and get a drink while you're sitting in Parliament. You know, it's that sort of, it's available all the time. And, you know, I think there was an interesting comment made by one of the female Liberal politicians, and I can't remember who it was, about the fact that she didn't get invited to any of the late-night drinking sessions where they basically decided on policy because she didn't drink.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to just quickly back to Nemesis. I thought the women of the Liberal Party held themselves up really well, especially Julie Banks.
I think they did as well. I think they were the best. They were the best show up of the lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that got me the most was when they played the footage of her in Parliament saying, "I am disgusted by the way my party is carrying on."
Mm.
Yep.
It's not the party I recognise. And
no,
to be able to say that without fear or favour, it's, yeah.
Means like the ship's already gone down.
Yeah.
You're telling the idiots to get out.
Yeah, and the fact that Julia Bishop didn't even get a look in on the leadership rumble, you know, she put her hand up for it and basically got dismissed out of turn.
And she's eminently qualified. She's actually a quite good operator. Yeah. I was a little bit surprised. Yeah,
and that sort of highlighted the fact that, you know, she was really tying the whole party together at that point. And she got dismissed out of turn, and you're like, well, there was obviously some...
Here's a very controversial statement I'm about to make. If Julia Bishop had won that spill, she would still be Prime Minister today.
Possibly.
I don't know. Like, if she won the spill and the people doing the sniping... shut the fuck up. Possibly.
I think reason that most people turfed out the Liberal Party wasn't that Labour ran a great campaign. Labour's campaign was mediocre at best. It was because during COVID, Scott Morrison had become a figure of hate.
We're all united in our dislike of him.
Look, it's interesting, though, because if you draw parallels back to the situation that happened with Labor, which they did in the body of this, which was really interesting, you know, they even talked about it, oh, we've just become another Labor party, you know, this sort of to-ing and fro-ing of leaders.
Not you.
So one of the things that I thought at the time was, well, if they had let Julie Bishop...
Julie.
there was a little faux pas there. If they had let Julie Bishop become the new Prime Minister, it would have paralleled the Julia Gillard,
Kevin Rudd
situation even more closely. And perhaps that was actually a consideration. It's like, we can't actually do this again.
And they did it again and again.
I mean, here's a Phoebeism. Think of the optics.
Oh, yes. Speaking of optics, this guy is finally saying goodbye to Parliament after 16 years for new challenges in the global corporate sector.
Of course.
You mean new bank balance inflation in the global corporate sector? I think he's cooked it, don't you? I think his goose is cooked now.
True. Don't let the door hit you on the arse on the way out.
I think they're going to make some pretty profound findings against him with the whole robo-debt stuff as well.
Probably also made him got eligible for a parliamentary pension, one of the juicy parliamentary pensions. So now he's going, fuck this out.
I think that if he had stayed for the findings of the robo-debt commission, he would have been suspended from Parliament. I think they are going to be that scathing of him.
Didn't they already do the Royal Commission?
Yeah.
No,
they did the Royal Commission. They have found against him already, that's what I'm saying. There hasn't been consequences from that yet.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that there haven't been consequences from that, and I think that when Parliament itself, and particularly the House of Representatives, has concluded its digesting of this, shall we say, he would have been seen to have held the House of Representatives in particular in contempt during that period because he gave them so little information.
Yep.
And he ran roughshod over what was effectively their decision and their right to vote on what was going on there.
Yeah, true enough.
It was a very opaque process, I think is the way of describing it. Speaking of, not opaque anymore, let's go over to the NZYQ High Court decision and its ramifications. And I've got this lovely man on the screen. It's all the right wing heroes today. So late last year was the NZYQ High Court decision that basically the High Court overturned laws involving indefinite immigration detention, which caused, I think, 149 long-term detainees to be released into Australia. That's still going on because apparently the Albanese government hasn't actually worked out what to do with them and hasn't, done much about it. And in question time this week, Andrew Giles, who is the immigration minister, was asked, has he contacted families of the victims of the criminals who have just been released? And this is what came up.
I asked the Minister for Immigration why the family I referred to earlier, the victims of the who lost their mother and mother-in-law to a murderer, Tony Kelliser, why hasn't that family been contacted?
If the Leader of the Opposition has the relevant contact details, I'd be very pleased. I'll be very pleased to speak with any affected family members immediately after question time.
That to me just seems a bit of a cop out. Honestly, it's like, you know, if you give me the contact details, then I'll contact them.
But I find the question itself to be disingenuous.
Well, it is question time, but it is interesting how here Andrew Bolt was talking to the two women. You know, the two women that Andrew Giles, the fucking immigration minister, doesn't seem to have the contact details of, and is kind of asking, hey Peter, if you've got just slim me their number and I'll contact him after question time. You know, it's like, to me, that shows that he's not really he's honest in that.
But here's the next question that comes from that. Okay. Whilst that may not be the greatest of answers, he may be precluded from going out and finding that information out. There may be preclusions that stop him as a minister from interfering with the judicial process in that manner.
Yeah. Look, it's possible. Then that really should have been part of the answer as well, is that, you know, by law, I cannot, you know, it's... Yeah, I know. It's just, it does, however, the optics, but I appreciate the honesty. That's probably the only thing. But yeah, the, but speaking of immigration happenings, in the last week, we have had 35, I think the number is now 35 asylum seekers actually arrive on the Australian mainland.
That's not supposed to happen.
I think Australian Border Force might need to be called Australian Border Farce, the way this is going. However, they didn't get to capital city.
They've always been the Australian Border Farce.
Well, that's a good point, Claire. That's a good point. But no, they haven't actually made it to like a capital city. Where they've gone is to like the far north of Western Australia, to a remote community called Beagle Bay.
Better have beagles in it.
It probably doesn't. I don't know, but ladies, your thoughts on that?
I don't actually think that this is the first, or will it be the last time that something like this has happened. I mean, this I just think it's probably been covered up more previously, you know.
Yep.
And they have found evidence that groups of people had landed in remote parts of Australia and perhaps not made it. And I do recall there was an incident a few years ago where. They did find some survivors from a boat who were being looked after in a remote community as well.
Yeah,
I just can't remember when it was, but so I don't think it's
so. This is
it's that unusual.
No, so this is Beagle Bay. It is. You can see it looks quite well. Yeah, lots of stuff there. And you zoom further out. There is no. It's near Broome, so like Broome is like the bump, like middle of. Bumfuck nowhere, but
exactly. It looks like it's a good 500-600 kilometers away from Broome itself.
exactly. So
it's not like it's the not, and it's not that far. It's not that far from Timor-Leste.
No, it is interesting. But what I do find quite interesting is that. So let's say these people were fleeing. Now, where were they? I think they were Pakistan. If I remember correctly, I think they were Pakistani. People were fleeing persecution in Pakistan. Let me just see if I can find. Here we go. I'll share this tab. So a third group has been discovered in WA's remote north. They told locals they're from Bangladesh and India.
There you go.
I don't want to sound like I'm a right wing crank, but aren't there plenty of other countries in between Bangladesh and India that would also be safe?
It depends.
Well, it depends what they're running from too.
If you are running because you're an apostate, Australia is probably one of the closest countries you're going to get to.
In all honesty,
if you're fleeing being a Muslim apostate from Bangladesh, the first safe country you're going to get to?
Singapore. Thailand. Thailand has a very strong Buddhist community.
But you're still an apostate, though. And Thailand is notorious for going, back you go.
It's notorious.
But it's notorious for sending people back to their country of origin without due process. Singapore doesn't really go, we recognize asylum seekers at all. It kind of just goes, go away. And it's a majority Muslim country. So, if you're an apostate, you're not going to get very far there.
Singapore's majority Muslim? Singapore is not majority Muslim.
Sorry. I'm thinking of Malaysia. I'm thinking of Malaysia. Sorry. At one point in its life, Singapore was part of Malaysia. So, you know.
Yeah, true. That is absolutely correct. I just find it interesting how, from here to there, there are heaps of other.
What I would say, though, is that you're going from Bangladesh. And you're going towards Australia. You're not going to stop in Myanmar. Civil war is raging in Myanmar. You're not going to stop in Thailand because, military coups are, a friendly reminder in that country. And as you move down, Indonesia, that's a majority Muslim country. That if you're an apostate, that ain't going to work. So the next country down is Australia. Mm. Now, if you go north, you're going to hit a whole load of dictator countries like Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, Afghanistan. They ain't going to be very friendly to you. You've got those communist bloc countries that ain't going to be very friendly to you either. Your Laos, your Cambodia. Yes,
but you're not looking for friends. You're looking for safety.
They're going to treat you like a Russian treats an Arctic prisoner.
A specific Arctic prisoner, by any chance?
A very specific Arctic prisoner.
That died from sudden death syndrome.
Yes.
Wouldn't you know it? Oh, boy.
But that's the thing that I don't think Australia quite realises. That for some of these countries, it is the first safe country nearby. And I think that's one of the things that is missed, because in some of these cases, the distances are enormous. But
yes,
if you're fleeing persecution as an apostate from Islam...
Well, we are assuming apostasy from Islam.
I'm not saying these individuals are. I'm just giving it as a hypothetical.
Yeah.
You cannot guarantee safety in any of the countries that are nearby. Afghanistan, they'll just shoot you. Iran, they'll just shoot you.
Nepal?
Turkmenistan, he's an absolute nutcase, the guy who runs it. Kazakhstan, Bhutan? I wouldn't go anywhere near it. Bhutan won't let you in. Won't let anyone in. Nepal won't let anyone in. Good luck getting to Nepal and good luck getting to Bhutan.
No.
Do you like climbing Mount Everest? Because if you do, Nepal and Bhutan are countries for you.
I know.
You go to Brunei, Jerusalem, they'll just shoot you. Australia, in some of these cases, is the first safe country.
Hmm. Yeah, definitely the safest, but I think it's a very complex set of questions that you need to balance.
Bangladesh does take a large number of refugees itself.
Okay.
Rohingya Muslims, for example, fleeing Myanmar. They're not running to Australia. Could very easily run to Australia, but they're not. They're going to Bangladesh. Mm. And the small, tiny numbers we're talking here, what, a couple of dozen people here?
Is a
drop in the bucket compared to the hundreds of thousands of Rohingya Muslims who have fled Myanmar and gone to Bangladesh and India.
And Thailand.
So it's very much a first world perspective on brown people who we don't like.
Oh, there's plenty of white people I don't like as well. Don't worry about that. I remember like during the Rudd Gillard years, where we had like hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds who arrived, and it caused a massive strain on federal government resources, because they had to, I think at one stage they were clearing out army barracks to make accommodation for asylum seekers. It's like, well, hold on. If we got to that stage, something's clearly gone wrong. Speaking of something clearly going wrong, let's go down to Tasmania, where they're having an election.
Not only are they having an election, but it's a year early.
And the Tasmanian House of Representatives getting bigger. It's getting,
yep, so they're going from they're going it's
getting
from
40% bigger.
Yeah, 25
to 35. 35?
Yep. 35, that sounds
40%
good.
40% bigger. It's getting
40%
bigger.
It's getting huge.
Look, I'm half tempted to run myself.
Why don't you?
You couldn't be any worse job
than the people running.
If I'd been given a bit more warning, I probably would have. But I'm
Clancy,
about to
Clancy, if you ran on better healthcare and no stadium, bam. I think there's 50%.
In all seriousness, if you ran on a platform, better healthcare, better local government, no stadium.
No stadium. Yep.
Look, there's already, I think there's already quite a few candidates who are running on exactly that platform. Mostly independents, but also some Labour people.
But you'd win.
Okay, so
Damien will come and campaign for you. Damien will get on a plane and hammer in some lawn signs.
I'll hand out some how to vote cards at the eight local polling booths. I'll cook some democracy sausages for you, Clance. How's about that?
Look, part of it's strategic, unfortunately, though, because what's happened recently in Labor politics is that, of course, we've had David O'Byrne, who's been forced to resign from the Labor Party and is going to be running as an independent.
Who, sorry?
David O'Byrne. So he's been a lifelong Labor member and, you know, come from a family of Labor politicians, and he was the leader briefly, and then unfortunately, someone dug some dirt on him, sending inappropriate texts about a decade ago to a staffer. That old chestnut. Isn't it funny how they managed to tar and feather Labor politicians for doing stuff that's not nearly as bad as the shit that the Liberals pull off? But anyway,
I think they all do dumb shit. It's just who gets found out for it and when the information comes out.
Well, this is true. So, yes, we're going to have an election on the 23rd of March. Unfortunately, I'm going to be elsewhere in Sydney, but we'll do a pre-poll.
Yep. And how is the campaign going so far? Any clangers, any big shifts in opinion? And do you think will win?
Well, one thing, of course, that happened straight off the bat was that Elise Archer had put her hand up to run, and then withdrew the very next, the former governor, attorney general, and then
I remember her. She is the one who resigned, who brought down the government, effectively.
She was the one that was forced to resign.
That's right.
Because.
Well, she had a fundamental difference of opinion with the Premier.
Okay, something in the back of my mind, says there was a, anyway, keep going.
Well, she was accused of bullying, evidently, by a staff member. Basically said to her that she had to resign, even though she denied any of it, and then
it wasn't
but
great.
Now I know she's got some health issues that she doesn't want to return for, so it's all very interesting.
Yes, but the tea leaf, what are the tea leaves saying? Who will the Liberal government be returned, and or will we see Labor?
Look, the part of the reason that they've called it for the moment is because the Labor Party is in a state of disarray. So they're taking that opportune moment. Well, it has been for a while, to be fair, but they're taking this opportune moment before they've gathered themselves, I think, to call the election. I think it's going to backfire on them. Having said that, Labor's not in a great position, and there's a lot of independents out there at the moment.
And there's the Green Party down there as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, especially this lady here, you know, it looks like she has a bit of sway in your part of the world, and good on her.
Yeah, JLN, they should do quite well.
Yeah, and I'm of the opinion that we'll probably have a minority Labor government that's going to be bolstered by independents.
Okay.
I don't actually think that's necessarily a bad thing.
I think that what you'll see is you will see a lot more parties getting elected.
So you'll see the Jackie Lambie network get elected. You might see somebody from the Centre Alliance get elected. You'll see a load of independents. You'll see some more Greens get elected. You might have some wackadoo party get elected down there. Some like our Bob Catter style individual get elected down there. Yeah. That will have their own party that will, because there are 10 extra seats.
Yeah.
Because these seats have got to go somewhere. And I can't see
there's already a few of them. So that they launched a new party at the last state election called the Local Party.
Okay. Yep.
Who didn't do very well, but that was because they were brand new. And I'd say that they're going to do reasonably well because they've been quite visible. They were known as the Local Party. They're calling themselves the Local Network now.
Oh, wow. That's a bit shit, that is. I really dislike that. That's a bit shit.
Yes. They might just call sort of the Monster Raving Lunatic Party.
That is an actual party in the United Kingdom.
I know, that's why I said
the Raving Lunatic Party. Are they the Tories?
No, there is an actual political party called the Monster Raving Loony Party that was founded by a man named Screaming Lord Such.
That's right. That's the guy. Yeah.
Genuinely, they stand candidates, and one of their policies was to have smaller class sizes will have children sit closer together. to cut down on change being given, we will introduce a 99p coin.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think the most
interesting thing is that this election's been called early. They've changed the makeup of the parliament as it sits anyway. So there'll be, Phoebe pointed out, there'll be 10 extra seats. Mm-hmm. And we're also going to be drawing from a lot of politicians who are going to be completely fresh. So people who've never been in politics before and possibly, you know, not even done local council politics.
Basically, putting
their hands up. So it'll be very interesting. And also the other thing to point out is that there's still a lot of talk about redrawing the council boundaries. So they've been talking about merging councils because we've got too many councils in Tassie.
Yep.
So you've got this sort of weird situation where they're increasing the seats in state parliament, but it looks like they're decreasing the seats in local councils. So you'll have some displaced councillors.
Yep.
Who might be up for contesting the next one, not this one because it's too soon and they haven't done the council boundary thing yet. But it's definitely a lot of flux happening in Tasmania. And then, of course, there's the very interesting possible outcome is that if Labor does win government in Tasmania, there will not be any Liberal governments in Australia.
No, that would be interesting indeed. I was going to ask you, Clancy, where are the 10 extra electorates going to be?
I'm actually not that sure. So I haven't really been paying that close attention to it, but they're just adding a few seats in the current ones, I think. They've redrawn a few boundaries already.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, two extra seats per electorate is what Adrian's telling me.
Geez, that's wow. Interesting. So I was going to ask, are there any pro-stadium candidates? Apart from Jeremy Rockliffe, are there any, like, hardcore pro-stadium people?
There are, but I haven't really heard much from them.
Okay.
It's interesting though because there's actually a big Facebook group, or there's a couple of big Facebook groups. So I am in the Facebook group, which is No AFL Stadium, And yeah. evidently there's a pro AFL stadium that's very vocal.
Okay.
And they've organised quite a lot and they put out stickers. So it's like cars everywhere with these yes AFL stadium, yes AFL team stickers everywhere. You don't see any ones against, but that's because they're not actually marketing them very well. But there seems to be a very vocal upswell of anti-AFL stadium people. They've actually discovered that the pro-AFL stadium Facebook group has actually been recruiting fake members.
Why doesn't that sound surprising?
That's never happened before. No. AstroTurfing.
Absolutely.
Who would have thought?
Yeah. But it's interesting because they just sell it all the time on the radio. You know, you have these pro AFL proponents going on about how much money we're going to be making for other things, but they forget that we're actually going to be in hock to the AFL for
quite
God
a long
knows
time.
How long. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then they try and sell it as if we're going to get all of these tourists visiting from out of the state to come and watch things. And I'm sorry, but, you know, they just had that Taylor Swift concert in Melbourne and half of Tasmania went over to the bloody Taylor Swift concert. So they're not going to come here.
As our traffic and rail networks discovered, it was quite a busy day.
I'm going to say something here on this point. I only found out who Taylor Swift was because I was watching the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And because I was watching the American football season, I'd hear this name occasionally, but because I wasn't a Kansas City Chiefs fan, I just paid no attention to it. But I only found out who this person was. Apparently this person's like really successful, but I'd never heard of her before this point. And it's like, oh, what do you mean never heard of her? Haven't.
Wow.
And it's just like, you've been living under a rock.
Well, the funny thing about Taylor Swift, I mean, I've known of her. I'm not a fan of her music. I haven't got anything against her. She's a successful woman doing her thing, you know, good for her. But the other thing I find hilarious is that there's this very strong Christian anti-Taylor movement. So evidently she's responsible for all sorts of dastardly things and corrupting youth.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's a demon in disguise and all the rest of that, which I think is hilarious. But anyway.
Anyway. Well, let's... So your final prediction for Tasmania, Clancy, is minority Labor government.
Labor government. I think that the Libs have just done too much damage and the three top priorities that they've quoted for quite a long time is health, housing and the cost of living. And I put in close fourth transport and infrastructure as major issues. And, you know, the fact that one truck turned over on a bridge can put the whole city in gridlock for 6 hours tells you something. And they're trying to put a bloody stadium right where the problem is.
Yep.
So imagine what's going to happen then. And it's just ridiculous.
It is a bit potty.
Clancy, where is Wiley Park and North Richmond and Kellyville? Given you're a former Sydney-sider.
Yeah. So they're western south suburbs. So the problem this we're talking about the asbestos that they found in the mulch. Yeah.
They did.
Yeah.
Hospital, supermarket, and New Park.
So the New Park found. Yeah, the New Park was the original place that they discovered the asbestos in, and that's at the Roselle interchange, and that's actually just near where my brother lives. I've been past there quite a few times. That's all that new development that they've just built. Mm-hmm. So that was the original place they found it. They'd had it open for 2 weeks, and then somebody was walking their dog or something like that and spied something that looked a bit sus, and I'm pretty sure that was someone that worked in the industry or, you know, had an inkling of what they were looking at. They subsequently traced the mulch back to a company and then followed it all back out again and realised that, in fact, they've been distributing contaminated mulch to quite a few different places, including schools and hospitals.
Green life.
Which Adrian will tell you that I basically said that would happen as soon as they found it at Rozelle. I said, I bet this is what's going to happen. And it did.
And it did.
So, of course, the question is, well, you know, having worked in the area too, I understand how these things work. But the interesting thing about this, of course, is where did this come from and how did the mulch get contaminated in the first place and who is not doing their due diligence and where have they been, you know, getting rid of their asbestos illegally for it to end up in garden mulch.
Yeah, because like there are usually fairly strict processes about asbestos handling.
There are very strict processes about handling asbestos.
I mean, I'm going to tell a short story. So my wife and I have recently been renovating our wonderful kitchen. Our wonderful, wonderful kitchen. And we had all new work surfaces put in, new floor put in and things. So we take out everything, rip up the floor, and we go right the way down to the base, to the absolute base. And on this base, there are these ox blood-coloured red tiles. I mean, they are a really deep shade of ox blood red. And I say to my wife, don't touch these, because we don't know what's underneath them. So we called a builder round and he went, you're not allowed to live in your house until I've got rid of these.
Okay.
You can't live in your house at the moment. You've got to go somewhere else. Or you've got to like saran wrap off your kitchen and then live in the other bits of the house. So we went for the, we'll saran wrap off our kitchen bit. Because it turns out that these blood red tiles were asbestos. Complete coating of asbestos on them. And where we had gone down to it ourselves, we had started to disturb them. So we were told, in no uncertain terms, go and get yourselves checked out. Mm-hmm. And we were told, in no uncertain terms, to not disturb them anymore. And he said, you have to seal this room off. And thankfully, your birds aren't anywhere nearby. And because they're in a room about three rooms down. And you can't come in here. Nobody can come in here without like a full bodysuit on, breathing apparatus, the lot. So we had to get a separate skip, a specialist skip. And this guy came round with about four other blokes. And they were dressed up like it was the apocalypse. They had rubber boots on. They had rubber gloves on. They had full body suits on, breathing respirators and everything, because apparently red asbestos is really bad. It's like really, 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 really bad.
Like, really bad. Properly,
this is like really bad. And under Michigan state law, if it's discovered, you have to get rid of it within like a month. You've got like a month to get rid of it. And we were just like, so you mean to tell me that we've been living with this underneath our kitchen floor, wandering around, going, oh, great, with red asbestos. And it's like,
yes,
we've got to get rid of it. And we had to get all these certificates to say that we were getting it done properly and everything. But to find it in garden mulch, it's just like, what? No, that would be my story about, you know, the asbestos that nearly kicked us out of our own home.
Look, the crazy thing about asbestos is a lot of people don't actually understand what asbestos is and where it comes from. And it's actually a mineral that is mined. Okay? So, for you know, people used to just have open-cut mines of asbestos and, you know, that was just how they did it. And then they discovered that it's got these great insulating and heat retardant properties, and that's how it ended up becoming used in all sorts of building materials and other applications.
Yep.
So, you know, for many decades, that's what they built houses from. That was part of the particle board that they built houses from, especially in Australia, because it was cheap, it was easy to use, and they just basically, you know, compressed it into sheets. And yeah, that was fibro houses in Australia, which was our cheapest building material. And it was seen as an ideal building product. Yeah, well, it was seen as an ideal building product because it was fire retardant. And I remember as a kid, you know, in doing chemistry at school, we all had asbestos mats, you know, with our Bunsen burners because they were fire retardant.
Yeah.
So, but they were bonded asbestos. So the problem is that, you know, when it's first mined, it's almost like a fiber, I guess, a fibrous mineral. And it is very small and quite light and easily inhaled. Once you bond it into something else, that's a little bit different. So once it's a building material and it's painted and it's in a set state, it's not dangerous per se. It's when you start doing stuff to it. So you're renovating and you're tearing it down and you're disturbing it and removing the coating that's making it stable. That's when it becomes a problem. Now, when I worked in the public health, of course, it was one of the things that we would get notifications for. So if anyone got diagnosed with mesothelioma, which is one of the cancers that asbestos can trigger, we would get a notification, and we would then investigate how this person came into contact with asbestos. Mm-hmm. And, of course, probably you're all aware of the Hardy, John Hardy company. And there was a big, class action against them for causing, for not actually looking after its employees and all the asbestos that they used to make, and people got very sick and died. So it was a big class action against them. But there was also lots of other asbestos around that had nothing to do with them, and plenty of different companies in the game. And, of course, the mines was one of those, and lots of other companies use it for various applications. I remember we had one woman who was about 50 years old, and we got a notification of her, and she was a teacher. She'd never worked in any sort of building industry. As far as she knew, she'd never come in contact with asbestos. And then when we were questioning her, she had this recollection, and she ended up bringing her mum to check on it, of her dad used to come covered in white dust. And she'd hug him. And it turned out he worked in one of these companies that used asbestos in their building materials. And so he would come home with his overalls just covered in white dust, and she would give him a hug, and she got asbestosis from that.
Jeez.
But it didn't actually develop into cancer until 20, 30 years down the track, because it's a very slow-growing cancer.
Can you imagine?
This is part of the danger of it, because it can hang around in environments for a very long time. I've got asbestos in my laundry. So when I was having my laundry done up, because it was an addition to the house, they actually identified, my builder said, "Oh, I'm pretty sure this is asbestos. We're not going to drill it." So I was like, "That's fine. Just, you know," so they just painted over the top. So, you know, so there's some things like that that, you know, it's still around. There's still people renovate their houses these days. They need to get it checked out before they actually have anything done, as, you know, Phoebe's discovered. It's still a major issue. And there has actually been an uptick in people being diagnosed with mesothelioma again because of that whole renovation thing, people renovating old houses and not properly accounting for the fact that there's probably asbestos there and not having that knowledge. I mean, builders, they all have to do a course now in managing asbestos. You know, it's part of the curriculum when you get your certificate. So, and a similar thing's going to happen with the silicosis as a result of the bonded stone, you know? Yeah, so same sort of thing. That's going to be part of it as well. And they've learnt from the whole asbestos saga.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, look, it's enough to make you want to join the Navy instead. And yeah, this is a
in the Navy.
Yes. In the Navy, it's possible that you'll get up to some no good. Military investigating claims of officers boasting of sexual conquests in WhatsApp group. Military police are investigating claims of sexually inappropriate behavior by senior Defense Force personnel, with a senator airing claims that male officers use WhatsApp to boast about their sexual encounters. When asked about the so-called three-ringed wranglers group, Navy Chief Vice Admiral Mark Hammond told National Senator Bridget McKenzie the matter was being taken very seriously.
I'm sure it was. I'm sure he wanted to be included to know who he could then go and conquest.
Hopefully not the senator. That'd be quite awkward. McKenzie raised the matter of the WhatsApp group while asking questions about the removal of a commanding officer from a warship last year over claims of heavy drinking while at sea. And I'm going to...
Sailors heavy drinking at sea. Oh, my goodness.
What a surprise.
Whatever shall we do? Whatever shall we do?
Where's my pearls? Oh, I better clutch my pearls. Think of the children.
What children?
Oh,
I'm joking with you, obviously.
Well, maybe. That's a... Anyway, hope so. But yes, more Navy, because this kind of stuff has been in the public sphere for quite a while, in that, you know, the heavy drinking culture of the Navy, being away for, you know, months at a time, having copious amounts of alcohol on board. What were we expecting? And look, you can say that you know, you train military personnel to take their responsibilities very seriously. But as we saw with the Ben Robert Smith saga,
that,
you know,
brilliant that was just brilliant. Top notch.
That was Australian professionalism on display. You know,
that wasn't just Australian professionalism. That was the elites of Australia's elite special forces units of the elite military regiments.
Hmm.
I'm going to say elite a lot because I'm elitist.
You're elite.
You're elitist. But yes, it's like, copious amounts of alcohol.
Sounds like the government. Up.
You say that.
Yes, so Barnaby can join the Navy. He retires from New England to take a position in
there you go. Join the Navy.
In the Navy.
Trying to be in the Navy. Yeah, and that could be an interesting sitcom. Barnaby sails the seven seas in the Navy.
That has to be one of the things that I never, ever thought I would have mental images regarding. Ooh, dear. And
I could just see him in some tighty whities on a deck somewhere, saluting the flag.
And just for a laugh, his nicknames for his two assistants are Pistol and Boo.
Yes, exactly.
Just to really, you know. And then he tells them to bugger off.
What on earth am I actually taking part in today?
I know. This is what happens when you let us, you know, when we don't meet for a long time. The frivolity builds up and up.
This could be a genuine career path for Barnaby. You know, Barnaby joins Border Force. I can see it.
What is it, Barnaby Force now?
Barnaby Force.
Dear, oh dear.
Alcoholic Barnaby Force. They're ABF. Woo! You don't even need to change the acronyms.
Well, that's how they're going to feel. That's that's going to how they're going to fuel the new submarines, you know?
With alcohol and Barnabys. Yeah. But no, it is interesting. Like, I will getting a little bit serious. So, just at the bottom of this article, Campbell revealed on Wednesday that the ADF was 7% below its authorized strength at its time when he's trying to expand the number of uniformed personnel. The federal government has set an ambitious goal of boosting its workforce by 18,000 people by 2040, a 30% increase in current levels. I think, given all of the stupidity that's gone on, all the bastardization, all of the the lunacy that has happened in, that has been revealed about the ADF in the last couple of decades, you know, would people themselves be comfortable with joining the Australian Defence Force? And would you be comfortable sending your children to the Australian Defence Force?
I would feel very, very uncomfortable with a child of mine saying, yes, I have mm-hmm. decided the best thing I can do is join the ADF. It would make me go, oh.
Oh, yeah. All right.
It would make me go, oh. Quite a few times, and I'd be going, oh, and I'd be asking them why, and it would be
for the free college tuition,
which worryingly is not the most absurd reason to join.
Oh, what is even more absurd?
Because you're fighting for your country and you think that it's full of dignity and you think that it's going to be the best of the best and you're going to be upholding Australian values, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I was more talking about the American experience where they actually like offer you like free college or something for...
They do that in Australia as well.
Oh, yeah, with Duntroon, yes.
Yeah. So it happens in the United Kingdom as well as Australia, where you can go to college for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've got friends where that is the case. They are in the US military because the US military have funded their college degrees.
Their education. Yeah. Look, and this is true. I was very bewildered by why anybody would want to join any sort of defence force for a long time. And then I discovered mm-hmm. that they actually do pay for your college education. So considering how much it costs in the USA to actually put yourself through college, I get it. I do get it. And it's even becoming like that here in Australia. It's become so expensive to actually go to university in Australia that a viable alternative is joining, defence forces and getting a scholarship to study whatever they think that you should study. I seriously considered it when I was doing my nursing degree, even, 25 years ago when I did nursing. That was part of the thing, whereas, I came across a nurse at one of my practices who was doing her first year as a new grad, and part of her program was that she'd actually joined the Army, and the Army had given her a scholarship to study nursing with the proviso that she remain with the Army for at least 2 years after she graduated.
That's not the worst.
And she was on a living wage. I was getting a pittance through Austudy and ended up having to pay half of it back. And she was on a living wage as a first year nurse.
It certainly makes inducement. I think
it does make you go.
It does make you go.
Yes, it does.
And I seriously speaking of things, I would never have survived 2 minutes in the Army because I would have been telling them all to F off within 5 minutes.
At least you tried. At least you turned up.
The most sensible thing to do in the ADF.
No. I'll finish with two more articles. We'll let Clancy get to the films. Next article is King Charles diagnosed with cancer, Buckingham Palace says. So King Charles has been diagnosed with a form of cancer. It has not been revealed. It is not prostate, but was discovered during his recent treatment for an enlarged prostate. So
it's not prostate cancer.
Apparently it's not.
They
no.
were very clear it was not prostate cancer in the paperwork that was released. It was, this is not prostate cancer.
Definitely not prostate cancer. No. Because King Charles lost his balls.
Oh, bollocks to it.
I don't know. Bollocks to that. But it is interesting
that's
brought
literally
Harry
low hanging fruit, Damien.
Oh, ha, 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 ha.
Some crown jewels that we won't be talking about again.
It's funny, I just played the sad trombone because that's probably what Charles is, that's what Camilla's nickname for it is.
Oh, well,
you
are
know,
just,
I was teabagging for Camilla.
This is bad. This is just bad.
This is. But I do find, getting a bit serious for a second, it is interesting how Prince Harry is kind of thawed relations between Prince Harry and the King. He even returned to like give his daddy a hug. It's like, well, maybe you know, there's hope.
Maybe daddy saying those things about the color of his son was, you know, not the worst thing on earth.
Yeah, exactly. There could be worse, much, much worse things, you know. So anyway, you know, and I'm going to end. There is finally a yes vote that Anthony Albanese has won. With news that during the week, Anthony Albanese.
Oh, you are such a bad man.
I am indeed, yes. I am indeed. So this will be second time down the aisle for our Prime Minister. He was wasn't Premier's like the opposition leader or something?
Carmel Tebbutt was briefly Premier of New South Wales. I met her. I was actually one of her campaign managers because of course Anthony was the federal member for Grainlaw, and she was the state
member.
Still is. Yes, he still is, which is why he's currently our Prime Minister. So I actually had a fair bit to do with both of them because I would come to the branch meetings and things like that. Met his son Nathan, who was only quite young at that stage. I think he was like 7 or 8 or something. But I used to do the handing out of how to votes and, you know, mob people at train stations and things like that. She was an interesting woman. I liked her, but she was a little bit standoffish.
I say this: good on the bloke. Good on him.
Yeah, good on him.
Happy for him. Happy for him. It's we'll see how that. Yeah,
it's
how
another,
goes.
It's
I just wonder
example
if Carl said,
of you know somebody who's a bit more down to earth being in these places as opposed to you know. A strange Australian cross between Donald Trump and a potato mixed in with some Boris Johnson running the Liberal Party.
Look, it's certainly like Albo's down-to-earthness is a lot more genuine than Scott Morrison's attempt at looking like a down-to-earth person.
I think if it had been Albo versus Abbott, you would have had one of the most down-to-earth and bizarre campaigns that had ever taken place.
It would have been
bloated
to
the extreme.
Imagine them two in a debate. They'd be chucking an AFL ball at each other.
Mind you, having said that, even though I would acknowledge that Anthony is quite blokey in his own way, he's also a very genuine feminist. And I don't think there's ever been any issues with him, you know, associated with the female members of the parliament.
Do you think that the females in his cabinet are there on merit?
Oh, for sure.
Well, I say Penny Wong, definitely. Penny Wong, but this
is the difference, is that they're not prevented from running because of their sex, so that they genuinely stand up and do their jobs. And most of the politicians in the current federal government have been there for a very long time. I mean, Penny Wong's one example, you know, and another one, you know, is the now I can't remember her name. But there's so many. There's so many, really, that are just generally competent, intelligent people.
Yep, indeed. I'll agree there. Now, the last question I have, though, is will Kyle Sandilands turn up?
Yeah.
I hope he does, and I hope he DJs at Albo's wedding.
Die.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah,
because
you may just well get it. Anyway, that has been the first episode of 2024 for Let's Save the Governor General. What are we doing for the rest of today and the week, ladies?
Well, I'm about to go to a movie.
I'm about to have dinner.
There you go.
Oh, okay.
I haven't had breakfast yet.
Oh, you better get some nutrition into you then.
I'm gonna have some brunch. Then I'm sort of starting my new job. I sort of started it, but not really. It's been a process.
Oh yes. Congratulations. Yeah. Yes, you mentioned that in the chat. So congratulations and yes.
Yes, a very big congratulations.
You are a computerized numerical control machine, I understand.
Yeah, something like that.
Things.
Well, when you said CNC, that's the very first thing
it's a computerized numerical control machine. I mean, I asked my wife, have you used a CNC before? And she went, they're great. They are. They're just wonderful and irreplaceable.
Awesome.
And just like Clancy is irreplaceable.
Just like me.
On that note, to all our listeners, look after yourselves, stay safe, stay sane, and if you see ScoMo, tell him to hurry up and leave Parliament so we can get on with the rest of our lives. But until then, let's save the Governor General!
Woo!
Yay!
In history's page, let every state advance Australia fair, in joyful strains than that.